This is Fenton Dunn, and you're very welcome. No corporate candy floss news, no political spin. Truth Radio by Internet. Here, the expression is still free. You're on the inside track from breakfornews.com. It's Friday, the 10th of September at 10 p.m. Eastern, and you're very welcome to the inside track on breakfornews.com. Thanks to our sponsor, neemwell.com, your personal source for potent Indian neem. And this is Fintan Dunn reporting. It's the eve of 9/11. And during this week, we've been taking a look at peak oil. Now we're going to go in depth into the issue of oil and energy with Tom Mattingly, who's joining us on the line from Washington, D.C., to help us answer the question, are you being scammed out of the energy you need? Tom's joining us shortly. But in case you didn't notice the message on the website, don't forget to tune in tomorrow. Special show on 9/11 tomorrow. This is a very special anniversary of 9/11. It's been an issue that's been very close to my heart since I first began to write about 9/11 issues 7 days after the event. And I know that for many of you listening, it is also a subject that's very close to your heart. And I feel that it's only now that we're beginning to really get our teeth into the issues of 9/11 itself, what happened on the day, and the reasons why it came to pass. I think we've made a lot of progress in terms of the what happened on the day. And I feel the peak oil issue is an essential component in understanding the why of that day. Remember also that we need your support for us to continue the work we do here on breakfornews.com, and it is always appreciated, to each according to their means. But your financial support is invaluable to our work, and thanks to those who have contributed. It's Truth Radio by Internet, so let's get on with the truth. And Thomas J. Mattingly is a seasoned observer of the Washington scene and someone who knows a bit about international economics, including energy economics. Thomas J. Mattingly is joining us on the line from Washington, D.C. How are you doing?
Good, Fenton. And yourself?
I'm doing just great. We're on the eve of the anniversary of 9/11, so feeling sort of a little bit expectant, because I believe this will be a very significant anniversary for the 9/11 truth movement.
It will indeed.
That's why we've been taking a look at a lot of 9/11 issues in the last few weeks on the show coming up to the anniversary. We have been looking at the issue of peak oil. What is going on here, and are we being scammed by the oil companies? One of the best places to start off is somewhere where we know we've been scammed by the oil companies, and that's in the California market, which is now almost legendary and leads us into Enron also.
Absolutely. Bush's friend Kenny Lay and Enron did it to us big time in California. The energy crisis in California was artificially created, artificially maintained, and the people of California are still paying through the nose, given what Enron, Kenny Lay, and the Bushes and Cheney's other friends did to us in California.
If you were to boil it down in a nutshell, describing what they did in California, they created a so-called free market, which was actually full of supply restrictions, and created bottleneck points within the system where then the free market ideology was used to create an open bid market in those bottleneck points, which of course drove the prices up at the bottleneck points. And the more bottleneck
supply and demand, sure.
Yeah, it should have been simple supply and demand, but it was supply and demand. You know, there was too many people between your petrol pump, gas pump, and the original suppliers. They were inventing whole tiers of distribution in order to create this artificial market.
It's the ultimate in supply-side economics.
Well,
the supply-side controls whether or not there is a supply.
Well, exactly, yeah.
The problem that we have now is not so much that we're running out of oil and running out of energy, but that we have too much of it. There are massive, massive quantities of oil all over the world in shallow places that you don't have to drill all that deep in order to get to it, such as in West Africa and in some of the tar pit in Canada that has more oil than Saudi Arabia, an oil field in West Africa newly discovered or semi-newly discovered, at least new to me, that has more oil than Saudi Arabia. And these reserves that are not counted amongst the official reserves are relatively untapped.
If you think about it, just looking at how the oil business would develop, it has to develop along the lines of supply and demand. So an oil company is going to be sitting there, and let's just notionally say that they're currently shipping 2 trillion barrels and they're getting $45 a barrel for it. And they find another 2 trillion barrels worth of supply, and they do their graphs and they check it out, and they find they'll only be getting about $15 a barrel for it if they supply 4 trillion to the market. Well, you've got to be a dummy if by supplying more to the market than is useful for your financial interest.
Of course, the oil industry is developing now, just like the diamond industry developed in the 1800s and the 1900s, where you supposedly had a relatively small number of diamonds that were available, and so therefore they were very costly. We all know now that there are plenty of diamonds in the world, and the real reason why diamonds cost so much is because the diamond cartel essentially buys up all the diamonds and shuts down the supply.
Mm-hmm.
Similar phenomena are happening in the oil industry.
Yeah. In that sense of a simple law of supply and demand, so the question of whether an oil industry would make sure that the supply of oil on the world market was consistent with its profits is a duh question.
It really is. You don't have to be an oil man to know that peak oil is a scam and a fraud. It's more of a strategy. It's not a thesis. It's not something for which you need to look at all the data in order to determine all of the complex scientific data with hundreds and hundreds of footnotes to scientific articles to know that it's a scam and a fraud. All you have to do is to have access to the Internet and go out there, and you can find your own oil fields, the big ones, that would more than prove the fallacy and the fraud of peak oil.
Now, the conventional wisdom, Tom, would say, in response to the kind of line that we're pursuing right now, we know that oil is cheap to drill in some places, and what we've found now is that we're encountering the limits at which it's cheap enough to drill. And so it's uneconomic, in inverted commas. Yeah, we found oil there, but it's uneconomic. How do you address that at an overall level, that argument, that public perception?
Well, the oil fields in West Africa, and even in the ones that haven't been fully tapped in Iraq and Iran, are very cheap. One of the reasons for the oil embargo and the oil crisis in the United States in the 1970s was because the oil in the United States was relatively expensive to drill, and the oil in Iraq and Iran and the Middle East and Saudi Arabia was relatively cheap to drill. It was something like 5 times more expensive to drill the oil in the United States as it was mm-hmm. in the Middle East. Well, let me tell you, from sources very close to the leadership in Iran and in Iraq, the previous leadership and even the current leadership, there are massive quantities of oil in Iran and Iraq that haven't been exploited and can be exploited. The production capacity of Iran and Iraq are conservatively approximately 5 times each what they were producing at their peak in the 1980s, in the 1970s.
If your prime motivation is going to be to conceal what's really going on, in other words, that there's plenty of oil around, then you might be interested in doing things like drilling out somewhere way out to sea and finding oil there, and then coming back and saying, yeah, we found oil there, but it's too dear, it's too deep, we can't get there. And pull all these kind of strategies, including maybe the oil crisis of the 70s, which in retrospect, when you look at it, all the extra money that the Saudis got, for example, they reinvested it in the United States. So,
sure.
You know.
I would not be surprised. In fact, I would be surprised the other way. I would not be surprised if that was the deal that was made in order to do the oil crises in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll let you guys have a lot more money for your oil, but you got to invest the money in the United States. You got to put it in our banks, and you got to invest it in our infrastructure. But you guys can get rich beyond your wildest imaginations. If they didn't do some type of a deal like that, I would be extremely surprised.
So would I. Let's get into some details on what actually could be going on. You're on the Inside Track on BreakForNews.com. I'm with Thomas J. Mattingly, and we'll be right back. And you're very welcome back to the Inside Track on BreakForNews.com. I'm with Thomas J. Mattingly, and we're discussing the issue of peak oil. But hold on a moment, let's just take a look at the spelling on that. That's spelled P-E-E-K oil, not P-E-A-K. It's
well,
peak oil.
Well, that's because they only let you take a peek at certain fields of oil. They don't let you take a look or take a peek at all of the oil. If they let you take a peek at all of the oil, then peak oil wouldn't be peak oil. It'd be peak oil.
I see. And so it's a sort of a peak oil, P-E-E-K oil. You can look, but you cannot touch.
That is correct. No drilling, no exploration. Nope. Otherwise, the supply would be too much and the price would go down.
Well, let's take a look then at the sort of tactics that might be used globally right now. Chaos theory for peak oil. Can you see any chaos out there?
Not if I close my eyes. All of the chaos, and I mean virtually all of the chaos around the world, exists only in the areas where you have oil and have the potential for oil. Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, Nigeria, even Sudan, even other countries in West Africa. The coup in Sao Tome and Principe last year, which was quelled by the powers that be, who helped to reinstall the leadership that was sympathetic to the oil interest, that was a great part about oil. The coup that was about to take place in Equatorial Guinea, in which Maggie Thatcher's little boy got arrested, there's oil there, too. In fact, it's very difficult to put a stick in the ground at any depth in West Africa and not hit a whole big pile of oil. It's all over the place over there.
Yeah, right. It's another way of looking at the problem.
Let's just take a look at Iraq in particular. We went in there with what appeared to be the best of intentions. We said we're going to go in there. We had all sorts of plans for developing the resources of the country and making Iraq the jewel of the Middle East. The development plans, the reconstruction plans, we're going to do all that. I was actually involved in some of the proposals in telecommunications to go into Iraq and do that type of thing. And I was meeting with some of the people very close to Rumsfeld, very close to Colin Powell, the Secretary of State for the United States and the Secretary of Defense. And these people were acting as if they really wanted to go in there and develop it. Okay.
Well, that was the spin.
It was a great spin. You got to say it. It even had me hooked. Even though I was very much against the war, I said, "All right,
I'll help out.
Stop it at this point." Mm-hmm. And so, what can I do? but I can get in there as quickly as possible mm-hmm. afterwards and help to develop the telecommunications and other infrastructure, including electricity and water and other things in Iraq, and help the Iraqi people get back on their feet and develop it, develop the country at least to the level it was before and way beyond, because the destruction of the infrastructure of a country is not necessarily the worst thing in the world for a country if it's rebuilt like Japan's was after World War II, and like Germany's was after World War II, and like Italy's was after World War II.
Yeah, and
but
at
what
the time,
happened?
Well, at the time there were suspicions, Tom, that when, you know, the telecommunications damage which they were inflicting, the suspicion was, being versed in alternative media, that they're doing that just to create work for U.S. corporations who will go in and rebuild the telecoms infrastructure.
I saw that myself personally, and I must admit to a very guilty pleasure of knowing that there was a possibility that that was exactly what they were doing, mm-hmm. and that I had the perfect solution to the problem that they were creating. Then when I saw more and more damage being done to the water supplies, to the hospitals, to the electricity, to vital infrastructure that was actually killing people, I became appalled. And so did the people who had been good top advisors to Rumsfeld and Powell.
Right. Well, I mean, that was the ultimate double cross, because it turned out that that infrastructure was being destroyed with no real intent of replacing the infrastructure in any kind of foreseeable future.
That's what I saw later on. That's what I saw early on. I saw that when the people began coming back from Iraq that were over there to supposedly develop or redevelop or reconstruct the infrastructure, and they were saying, well, wait a second, we could be doing this so much better. They must be deliberately screwing it up. And that's precisely what I've come to conclude. For instance, just something slightly unrelated to the oil thing, when they fired all of the Iraqi troops, 400,000 Iraqi troops, Garner wouldn't do it, and then the new guy, Bremer, did that as his first act while as the viceroy for the United States in Iraq. So you had 400,000 Iraqi troops with guns and no money. They did that same thing with the teachers. They fired 25,000 Iraqi teachers. So you not only had 25,000 Iraqi teachers out of work, you had all of the students of Iraq out of school. And this is a prescription for chaos. And I've confirmed this with some of the top generals of the United States. They were appalled at the strategy that the United States was using in Iraq that they thought could only result in chaos. What we didn't suspect at the time, or at least I was only asking questions about it, is that this was a deliberately pursued strategy, a resource denial strategy to destroy the oil infrastructure of Iraq in particular and the general infrastructure of Iraq in general. The oil infrastructure destruction, it has an obvious purpose, and that is to continue to drive up the price of oil and to make those people who are advocating the peak oil strategy, not the thesis, but the strategy of peak oil, correct in what they were saying. Because if Iraq isn't producing and exporting their oil, then of course the production is down. And the same thing is about to happen in Iran again, unfortunately. The Bush administration has essentially announced that their plans to destabilize Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And that will result, and there's supposed to be a strike on the 22nd of September of this year that has now been averted, but that's just the first of many tools that are going to be used in order to destabilize the government of Iran. The oil of Iran and the oil of Iraq ought to be used for the benefit of the Iraqi people and the Iranian people. There's no question about that in my mind. It's not ours. But what we're doing, essentially, at the moment, is making sure that nobody can get this oil.
Well, I must say that what I've been discussing in the last few days with people on the peak oil issue, it makes sense for me of what I saw. For me, when they let the army go, that's when I knew they had no intention of rebuilding Iraq, because you couldn't shoot yourself more effectively in the foot.
Well, they didn't generally shoot in the foot, by the way.
Yeah, right. But boy, you know, that's completely inconsistent with any intelligent occupation strategy for Iraq, was to literally throw everybody who's in the army out of work and effectively send them off to join the guerrillas, for crying out loud. So it was obvious that what we've had is the creation of a chaos in Iraq.
Absolutely.
Which ties into
peak
oil.
By
design.
That's the part where I differ with some of my friends that are a little bit closer to the powers that be here than I am, and that is, they're saying, oh, well, it's by accident, it's by negligence, it's by incompetence. We're doing this stuff accidentally. That's really not our intent. But Fenton, the United States isn't all that stupid. Our military is not all that incompetent. We're actually pretty good at what we do. And given that fact, what I say that we're doing and what others are saying that we're doing is that we're doing this destruction by proxy, but also by design. We're pissing off the Iraqi people enough that they're going to say, well, we'll fix you. We're going to blow up our own oil infrastructure. Ha, ha, ha. And the guys who are promoting this deliberate policy of destruction are breaking out the champagne.
Yeah,
it's
time for us to take off the rose-tinted glasses on this issue, because that's the strategy then which is being applied around the world, where this strategy is being applied in order to restrict oil supplies. And let's get into some of the other tactics that are being employed, because there are other energy sources besides oil, and we'll get into that just after a little music break. You're on the Inside Track on breakfornews.com, and with Tom Mattingly, and we'll be right back. And you're very welcome back to the Inside Track on breakfornews.com. I'm with Tom Mattingly. We're discussing peak oil. And becoming more and more a question of, is peak oil a scam? Is like, is George Bush an oil man? You
well,
know? I mean, let's add two and two together here.
Don't forget Dick Cheney. I seem to recall that Dick was an oil man, too, at one point in his life.
Yeah, and I seem to remember that somebody in the administration has got an oil tanker named after them.
Really? I thought they covered up that name. Kindy, hello.
So, yeah, let's add two and two together. It's going to be a tough one. Let's see. Hey, four. So if this is what these people have been up to in relation to what we know about existing, legitimate, scientifically recognized supplies of oil, and one of the things they might be concealing is a non-biological source of oil.
The fossil fuel hypothesis for oil is just pure and utter BS, okay? There's just too much oil at too deep of a level for all of the dinosaurs and other life forms on this planet to have decayed and produced all that oil and all that gas and all those hydrocarbons.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, as Dave McGowan indicated last night, given the fact that we've found hydrocarbons on other planets and planetary bodies in our solar system, and we have no evidence whatsoever that there were any dinosaurs or any other life forms there in sufficient quantities to produce those types of hydrocarbons, there's got to be abiotic or non-fossil sources for the oil that we have here on this planet. And there's a whole body of science that is being ignored in the West, relatively speaking, that indicates that oil is not produced by the decay of fossils from the past. It's produced by, in the core of the Earth, in the magma, at the level of the magma in the Earth. And if you drill down several thousand meters, 5,000, 10,000 or more meters, then you begin to find a relatively limitless supply of oil, and I do mean limitless supply of oil for all intents and purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Russians have begun to do this and have been doing this for years. And there's an article that you and I are, of course, familiar with by Joe Vials on the Internet, namely entitled Russia Proves That Peak Oil is a Misleading Scam. And that's precisely what it is. Once you begin to tamp down deep enough into the earth, you get to this unlimited level of oil, and the Russians are producing it, and they're beginning to export it. They're building a deep water oil port at the precise place where a lot of this limitless supply of oil is being drilled, exporting the technology to places such as Vietnam, China, and if my preliminary research is correct, also to Norway, and in the past, they've also tried to export it and were drilling for it in the Bengal Basin that abuts the, both India as well as Bangladesh. So it's there, and it doesn't take all that much to get to it, but once you do get to it, you've got a limitless supply of oil from each of the wells. The only thing that is a limiting factor is the size of the pipe and the size of the pump that you're using in order to bring up the oil.
And it's not a different oil, is it?
No, it's the same oil.
It's the same old oil. You're just doing what? Going deeper to find it wherever, almost wherever you drill.
Correct. And other, also, if this oil were not the same oil, then the oil fields that we have on the planet would not be replenishing themselves. In other words, if you wait a long enough period of time, 20, 30, 40 years, the oil fields that were supposedly pumped dry fill up again. Now, where are they filling up from? They're filling up from the magma level of the Earth.
Well, that's astonishing. And there is good scientific evidence out there
Absolutely.
That this is actually
the
going on.
The Ukrainian oil science on abiotic or non-fossil fuel is just overwhelming. And we in the West, and especially the United States, are essentially ignoring that and acting as if it weren't there. Now, it's going to be very difficult to ignore all of the tankers and pipelines that the Russians are now producing and building when it begins to swamp the United States. Russia is going to begin exporting oil in virtually limitless quantities to the rest of the world. And so what we're seeing here with peak oil is one last gasp of the Western oil industry before the Russian science overwhelms the West.
Well, we're moving now into in the earlier part of the program. I think we were covering areas that were duh. Now we're starting to cover areas that are oh really? I didn't know that. Let's cover another some other oh really? I didn't know that stuff. For example, scalar energy or Tesla energy.
Sure.
And there's evidence, again, there that this is scientifically valid, and also evidence that they're messing around with developments in the free energy sector to make sure that they don't happen.
Absolutely. We've got Tom Bearden, for instance, who's a longtime employee of the U.S. Department of Energy, who has patented a Tesla-style energy device about the size of a bread box, could fit on top of your kitchen table, doesn't produce any emissions, and produces power essentially forever. It'll power your home, it'll power your car, it'll power a bunch of different things, if you have a relatively small input of energy in it to get it going, and there it is. And he's been working with the U.S. Department of Energy for years, but his work is relatively unknown and not understood outside of his website. He is certainly not the only one. I personally work with one of the top physicists in the world and a group of about 20 or more different scientists, inventors, and physicists and business people who are producing mm-hmm. these types of devices, including room temperature superconductors that will reduce the loss of electricity over our transmission lines almost to zero. And the question on room temperature superconductors is not whether or not these items exist. Yes, they do exist. The only question and the only problem right now is how do we make the wire that will allow this type of thing to happen. It's a relatively technical, but not all that technical, process called extrusion of the superconducting wire. And they're just about to perfect that. It's a relatively small leap between the production of room temperature superconductors and the production of a wire that will enable trans-hemispheric electricity from the dark side of the planet to the light side of the planet economically and without any loss, or without with virtually no loss of electricity. At that point, the peaks and valleys in the supply of electricity would be balanced between the hemispheres, creating an inter-hemispheric grid that would make electricity virtually too cheap to meter.
An astonishing idea. The implications of that are huge in terms of...
Yeah, they are, of course.
Because, as you know, when you turn on an electric fire, the reason it glows is because of the resistance the wire offers to the electricity trying to flow through it. So if you can solve that problem, then you can take a huge loss out of the electricity grid that's currently in there. But tell me this. What is it that stands between the greedy capitalists and this kind of technology?
Between the greedy capitalists and the abundant energy is power. And I do mean that in the double entendre sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
What the greedy capitalists lose if they allow abundant energy to be recognized, not invented, not developed, but recognized, is power. They lose their power and control of the people on this planet. Okay? Because what the artificial shortages, not only of oil, not only of electricity, but also of all of the resources on the planet that are abundant, if that scarcity, those artificial scarcities, are being used and have been used for centuries in order to control and manipulate the people of various and sundry different countries and different cultures. Once you eliminate that, then you eliminate the ability of the so-called powers that be to control the people on the planet, because if they don't have to depend on the powers that be for their livelihood and for their sustenance, then these guys lose control.
Well, yeah, if I look at my situation as an average consumer, you're telling me I've been scammed blind on the electricity, which
absolutely.
I'm paying out for. I mean, electricity, I pay out a lot for electricity. You're telling me I've been scammed every time I pull up at the gas station, big time.
Sure,
you're telling me that, in fact, if I was to get to the situation that I was really able to access the freest possible amounts of energy that are currently available, I could have a thing out the backyard here which looked just like my oil burner, but which enabled me to plow fields, to grow crops, to put in artificial lights, to turn myself into a completely self-sufficient entity, and I could disconnect from the electricity grid, and when they come around with the voting register, I could say, I don't care, actually, I don't bother voting anymore.
Yes, that really is a possibility, but I would suggest that you vote. If for nothing else, get these guys out of office.
Well, the reason...
They're the people that are preventing us from developing these resources and recognizing the abundant energy and other resources that we have here on this planet. Peak oil is not only a scam and a sham, but it's a deliberate strategy of the powers that be to get the people to continue to be under their control.
Well, in that context, there's another greedy capitalist question that arises as well, which is, what if a different group of greedy capitalists, a subgroup, see all this free energy technology stuff and say, hey, we can steal a march on the other greedy capitalists and we'll get this to market. And we've got money and we want to make 20 times as much money out of it. And that's what we'll do if we get behind this thing.
Let's I've seen that exact scenario played out many, many times. Anytime that the people with money get close to developing these technologies in somehow, some way or another, that either the greedy capitalists who want to develop these technologies or the inventor himself or herself has some type of sabotage, and often very subtle sabotage, done to them. And that is essentially what's been happening for years and years and years.
Right. Well, there's a lot of people suspect that that's the case, I think, at this stage. Not only with Tesla Energy, which we've discussed there, but also with hydrogen energy, energy from water using catalytic crackdown. You know, we have a so-called war on terror, but really, and maybe going back 60, 70, 80 years, it's actually a war on free energy.
It's longer than that, actually. The Tesla technologies have existed for almost 100 years.
Right.
When the Tesla technologies first came out, J.P. Morgan was one of the primary people who suppressed the technologies. His question was, well, if it's decentralized, how can we meter it? Okay, how can we cut it off when the people don't pay? And certainly there is no incentive for him to develop a technology where you buy it once and you don't have to pay again. Okay. Especially if you can mass produce these items in for relatively cheaply, and his group and others that have essentially been in control of the energy infrastructure on this planet for decades have suppressed every single technology that's ever been even close to getting to market. And there are several technologies with which I'm personally familiar. There are several inventors with whom I'm personally working, who have these types of technologies ready, willing, and able to go.
Well, you know, it puts it all in the context for me now, because I did grow up in an era, as did many people who were the wrong side of 40 at this point in time, when we had dreams of the future, when we made movies like 2001 A Space Odyssey, when we saw ourselves going around in these kind of free energy devices in our homes, etc., etc. That was a vision which was a natural vision for a society which was becoming scientifically and technologically competent beyond its wildest dreams. And it seems to me as if somebody has mired our attempts to reach for the stars in a scam designed to hold us back in Industrial Revolution era technology.
Absolutely. If you take a look at the development of technologies over the course of the 100 years leading up to, say, the 1960s or so, you'll find that the acceleration of development of technologies that led up to that point was so rapid, and it was supposed to increase even quicker after that point. It actually did behind the scenes, but most of the good stuff was kept from the American people and the people of the rest of the world.
Well, there you go. It's a war on freedom. That's what it is. It's a war on freedom at all levels. Personal freedom, energy freedom, and the freedom to build a future for all the people on the planet.
It's a war on abundance. It's a war to keep people from recognizing the abundance in which we live. If they recognize that, then they would know that they are essentially already free. All they need to do is recognize it and take advantage of the opportunities that are already at hand.
Well, that's a very encouraging message, because in an information era, knowledge is power. Get this kind of information out, folks. We have to realize exactly what the battle is and why it's been fought and how it's been fought. Thanks very much, Thomas Mattingly, for joining us tonight.
You're quite welcome, Fenton.
I'd like to thank Thomas Mattingly for joining us. I found that very informative, and I hope you did also. I'll be back tomorrow with a special inside track on the third anniversary of 9/11. Tomorrow I'll be putting together some of the puzzle pieces, turning the story of 9/11 inside out, and I hope you can take the time to join me in that. Meanwhile, for breakfornews.com, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting.